Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear the third part of the audio version of the scientifically based documentary 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, which was produced by architect Richard Gage and his fellow licensed architects and engineers. There are currently 1,949 and continually growing architects and engineers who have put their professional reputations on the line, saying that the official story of how the three towers collapsed on 9/11 is fraudulent and scientifically impossible. It defies the laws of physics. The corporate media and much of the alternative media isn't telling you about these 1,949 architects and engineers who have examined the evidence and say that the official story is scientifically false. This is the third part. If you missed parts 1 and 2 that aired in the last 2 weeks, my shows are archived at radioforall.net, and that's radio and the digit 4, radioforall.net. And if you click on Contributor and then look for Cheryl with a C, you'll find my shows. So let's begin with the third part of the audio version of this excellent, scientifically-based film, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out.
This is the original site of the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Construction is now underway where dramatic new facilities are being erected. Just 10 years ago, the planes hit the towers, cutting through some exterior and interior supporting structural steel columns. The fuel from the planes ignited office fires across several floors. According to the official reports, the structural steel frame was weakened and failed, causing a total progressive collapse of each tower. Does the official explanation make sense? Was there a comprehensive investigation that examined all of the evidence? Let's look at the details.
These buildings were designed to take multiple impacts from airliners.
I walked into the office, and the first words that I heard was, "A plane's just run into the World Trade Center." And my initial thought was, well, that's okay, it's built to withstand a 707.
He stated that the fuel would be dumped into the building, but the building would still be there, although most of the fuel blew out the opposite side of the building.
These buildings are built to handle several times the load above them. Those perimeter columns could handle five times the load above them, and the core columns could handle three times the load above them.
The majority of the jet fuel was burnt up instantly in the big fireball, and it was gone. The fires that were left were office furnishings and carpet and things like that. A lot of things in these kind of buildings have to be fire resistant by nature. It's required by code. So there really isn't a whole lot of fuel in there to begin with.
The media portrayed these fires as being extremely hot, but the fires were not that hot in World Trade Center 1 and 2. If you look at the NIST's own data, you could see this. And to use our own powers of observation, you could tell by seeing these fires and seeing black smoke come out the windows, that means that the fires were oxygen starved and it was incomplete combustion. And so it was a low temperature fire.
I am Robert Podolsky. I have a master's degree in theoretical physics from Xavier University in Cincinnati. I worked for 10 years as a professional physicist, engineer, systems analyst for government and for industry, companies like Avco, GE, Bendix, and also Air Force Avionics Lab and the Coast Guard Electronics Division. I looked up in a manual the burning temperature of jet fuel and found that under the conditions that existed at the World Trade Center on 9/11, that jet fuel had to have been burning at about 750 degrees Fahrenheit. I also noticed that the official explanation of what happened there was that the heat from the fire supposedly softened the steel and thereby brought the buildings down. If you have a flame at 750 degrees, you can hold that flame under a steel beam forever, and you'll never reach a high enough temperature to bend steel, let alone melt it. So immediately I knew at that point that the official explanation was dead wrong. There was no way those flames could have possibly brought about the collapse of the building.
It did not seem possible that these towers that were designed to withstand the impact of a 707 could possibly collapse in such a short order of time from the time that they were hit. There's no way the building was designed to take the impact of one, if not more, multiple airplanes. They were designed to withstand hurricane force winds of up to 140 miles an hour.
My first reaction was, that looks like controlled demolitions. However, I believe the official story because it was played to me over and over again. I heard repeated experts telling me that this was terrorists that did this and that it was planes that brought those buildings down. So I accepted the official story.
The NIST testing of the Twin Tower floor assemblies done at Underwriters Laboratories. This was done per ASTM E119 in a 2-hour, 2,000 degree fire test. During the test, the main trusses sagged approximately 4 inches after 60 minutes and 6 inches after 100 minutes. Yet NIST had the main trusses sagging well over 40 inches in their models.
Rather than a slow, groaning collapse that we might anticipate, the Twin Towers show in the videos a very rapid, sudden onset of destruction. What does this imply?
I'm Frank Cullinan, a practicing civil engineer in the state of California. I have a Bachelor of Science from Chico State, which I received in 1988. I've been a licensed civil engineer since 1993. I specialize in bridge construction, retaining wall construction, small building construction, bridge demolition, and I have experience in bridge design and building design. Structural steel is required by building and design codes to prevent catastrophic failure and loss of public life. Everybody's seen the building collapses on 9/11, and it was shocking how fast the buildings collapsed.
The way the buildings fell was not indicative of the way a building that's in distress collapses.
This doesn't happen with structural steel buildings and never has and never will again. We assume that fires could destroy a building. Why people select steel buildings is because they would destroy slowly. It would gradually twist and bend and give people plenty of time and safety in getting out of the building.
The basic philosophy of the building codes in the last 75 to 80 years has been to ensure ductile failure of the members to provide for the public safety. Under this philosophy, members that are overloaded will deform elastically within the elastic range of the material with increasingly large deformations and deflections. This gives rise to large deformations that are visible and apparent to the occupants of the structure, and this gives them time to evacuate the structure.
I would not have expected the whole building to just give in at once, and I thought it rather odd that they fell almost perfectly in very similar ways. It seemed odd that lightning would strike twice.
Upon further review of the videos of the tower's destruction in the 9/11 Blueprint for Truth DVD, I was surprised to see the upper floors of the North Tower, the upper 15 floors of the North Tower, implode prior to any destruction of the tower below, because it would be logical that as a result of the plane crash that the upper 15 floors would start to damage the floors below, not the floors above.
And it certainly would stay in the damage zone. It would not drop down through 80,000 ton of insulated, undamaged structural steel. and do it in 12 seconds.
I discuss this claim that the upper section of each of the towers crushed the lower section. However, when you watch video closely, in the case of World Trade Center 1, you'll see that the upper section disintegrates itself. Its lower stories are breaking up before it even impacts the lower section. It appears to be a controlled demolition of its own, of the upper section.
The tops of the buildings were basically disintegrated.
The top section, pushing on the bottom section, it's going to meet equal forces as it goes. Both sections are going to be demolished at the same rate. So by the time you've crushed up 15 stories below it, the top 15 stories are also going to be crushed. And so there's nothing left now to crush the rest of the building. So there's so many paradoxes here. A little tiny chunk of the building can't possibly fall and crush the entire structure below it.
Well, there's demolitions done in France, which use what we call the Vernage technique, where they take out a couple floors worth of columns with hydraulics. They take the columns out and they let the building, the upper section of the building, drop two full floors. And when it impacts the lower section, there's a very definitive, observable jolt, deceleration, and velocity loss.
You're looking for a jolt, that this thing, if it actually comes down and hits, you should be able to see the point at which they actually impact, because it would actually slow down the motion of the falling block.
And you can see it in the graph. It is not there in the case of the North Tower.
It never slows down. It accelerates the entire time. And that was what was extremely significant. So I published a paper about that. It's in the Journal of 9/11 Studies. And so if you had the top section acting like a pile driver, if in fact it actually hit and made an impact, it was effectively crushing anything, pushing hard on this core structure below it, the core structure is going to push back equally hard. And that's what's going to cause the top section of the building to slow down. But the fact that it's constantly accelerating downward is evidence that it didn't slow down. It's not actually hitting and engaging with the structure below it in any way that could demolish it. The top section is not crushing the bottom section of the building, or it would meet resistance.
I am Richard Heumann. I am a retired professional electrical engineer. I went to Brooklyn Polytechnic Institute and received the Bachelor of Electrical Engineering degree in 1954. I worked for Joseph Flooring for 41 years and was principal chief electrical engineer for the World Trade Center complex. I was very familiar with the Twin Towers elevator systems because we took over conceptual maintenance and improvements of the elevator systems after the project was completed. I actually ran and rode up and down elevator shafts on the top of a car going 1,200 feet a minute. You could imagine the experience. I'm very familiar with the interior structure that surrounded the elevator shafts and the accessibility which the elevator companies had 24/7. The only way that I can see that the towers could have collapsed is that the interior columns were compromised. In Tower 1, unless my eyes were deceiving me, before the tower started collapsing from the top, the antenna started to fall. And the antenna, of course, was over the middle of the elevator shafts. And, of course, their access to the elevator shafts gave them total access to the surrounding core columns, the interior of the core columns.
Me
NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, acknowledges that the towers came down at essentially free-fall acceleration. What are the implications of that admission?
The measurements have indicated that Tower 1 collapsed in about 11 seconds and Tower 2 collapsed in about 9 seconds. And the argument goes that this is essentially the rate at which free fall would happen.
I had a friend that asked me if it was possible for the Twin Towers to achieve near free fall speed when they collapsed.
The Twin Towers could not have come straight down through the thousands of tons of structural steel through the greatest resistance of 80,000 tons of structural steel at the speed of a practically free fall. That just would not happen.
There are columns of steel around the exterior of the building and within the core, all of which are there to prevent the thing from falling down. And so even if something falls on it, it's not going to immediately just go pop, 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 pop like that, floor by floor. If it's going to collapse, it's going to have to take some time to weaken the structure below it.
This structure was capable of holding 3 to 5 times the weight, and here it is falling through it with the resistance of only 1/3 of its weight. Roughly 90% of the resistance has been removed, and what's happening is the top section is not crushing down the lower section like a pile driver, which is the picture that NIST basically is painting. It's actually falling into material that's already been pulverized, that's offering very little resistance. It's just coming down through pre-pulverized material. One of the fundamental laws of nature is the conservation of energy.
There was no time for this elastic deformation and plastic deformation, which would have absorbed energy and decreased the descent to less than free fall speed. As energy is drained away from the system to deform those members, it would slow down the descending mass and cause a descent at less than free fall speed.
This is high school physics, and our whole society is being led to believe that these fundamental laws of physics, hard science, don't apply anymore. I think that should really frighten all of us.
Over 400 connections per second had to fail in order for the members to be released and for the structure to descend at almost free fall rate.
Structural connections not only had to fail nearly simultaneously, but in sequential order.
The buildings fall at a speed which can only occur if the structure has been removed, the vertical structure.
This block accelerates straight down. Or it's just picking up speed downward continually. It doesn't slow down, it just continues to gain speed.
From what I understand, the buildings actually accelerated as they came down, meaning they were not getting resistance from these massive columns in the center of the core of this building. The core of this building was very heavy. They're huge columns, huge.
I could not see how those massive, very thick columns could just snap like that. I would have expected most of them to stay intact with the floors collapsing around them.
I'm Alfred Lopez. I'm a registered professional structural engineer in the state of Michigan and have been in private practice for 40 years with Lopez Engineering. I've worked on several high-rise projects with office buildings above parking decks and high-rise apartment buildings here in the Detroit area. I've done numerous investigations of failures of buildings because of fire and wind damage. I was shocked at how the buildings collapsed. I would expect that they would have come down much slower, that it would have tipped over, that the whole thing did not make sense. And ever since then, I had a hard time believing that the fires did drop the buildings.
I thought that given the way the planes hit the building, one side would have given away first and it just would have fallen off or fallen over at a steep angle, but the way the whole thing just gave way at once and started to plummet down without slowing down as it went down. Again, just like the controlled demolition I witnessed personally.
The area below the damage zone where the planes flew in and where the fire was, that area below that, those 80 or 90 stories, 80,000 tons of structural steel was not damaged in any way. Yet you stood there and watched it destroy itself, wiping out floor by floor all 287 structural columns as if they didn't exist underneath the damage zone.
According to the first responders' oral histories, which were reported in the New York Times, over 100 first responders reported sounds of explosions and flashes of light at the onset of destruction of both towers. These were not discussed in the NIST report. What did these eyewitnesses actually see and hear?
All the other evidence of seeing flashes and explosions and the melted metal and the dust particles and with the chemical, the explosive chemicals found in the debris, there's just a lot of questions about what's been going on, and that these questions have not been answered or even addressed in any sort of full way.
We have eyewitness testimony of firemen, policemen, news reporters, and occupants of the building to explosions, an enormous number of eyewitness testimonies.
There was a heavy-duty explosion.
Inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
There were numerous secondary explosions taking place in that building. There were continuous explosions.
There was a secondary explosion, probably a device either planted before or on the aircraft that did not explode until an hour later.
Then there was those secondary explosions and then the subsequent collapses.
It sounded like gunfire. You know, bang, 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 bang. And then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
About 50 consecutive bangs, and it fell down like a waterfall.
And we heard the noise associated with an implosion.
We heard a very loud blast, explosion.
We heard a loud explosion.
At that point, we heard a large boom.
Do you know if it was an explosion or if it was a building collapse?
To me, it sounded like an explosion.
There was another major explosion.
All of a sudden, you hear explosion, and you could see the building starting to collapse.
Huge explosion that we all heard and felt.
We could hear a rumble, which was about 5 seconds long, preceding the actual collapse, and then a boom when each of those towers collapsed.
Just seconds ago, there was a huge explosion, and it appears right now the second World Trade Tower has just collapsed.
I was about five blocks away when I heard explosions.
Then you heard from far away, boom, boom. And you heard the boom, 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 boom.
It was like, as if they had detonated.
Yeah,
as if they were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
And it just started going pop. It just started going boom, 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 boom. And he goes, how fast? I go, like firecrackers.
One of NIST's other excuses was that there were no blast sounds heard by witnesses or recorded. There's so many videos of witnesses from that day that report explosions. There's radio transmissions from the FDNY. We have the transcripts that were recorded, you know, back in 2001 of all these firefighters and first responders reporting explosions. There's no doubt they were heard.
In the oral histories of the emergency personnel taken down in late 2001 and early 2002, there are over 100 individuals who make comments about seeing, hearing, and feeling explosions in those buildings. These oral histories were documented well before NIST started their World Trade Center's investigation in September 2002. This testimony should have caused the presumption that there was a good chance explosive residue would be found and justified testing for it, rather than the opposite.
Reviewing the some of the eyewitness accounts and people hearing what sounded like explosions and things like that. Again, it didn't seem very plausible for any other type of cause for such an event.
It doesn't look like a collapse. It's like a huge mushrooming, billowing kind of an event. That whole thing looks nothing like a building falling down. It's a building being blown up, and it's being blown up progressively from the top down. That's what the physics shows.
NIST acknowledges in their response to a request for correction that they are unable to provide a full explanation of the total collapse. Yet they refuse to consider the possibility that explosives or some other form of demolition device could have been used to cause the collapses of the towers. And the fact that controlled demolition is consistent with all the available technical evidence. And the response to that request for correction is NIST simply saying they're unable to provide a full explanation for the total collapse, even though that was their task given to them by Congress.
The core structure of the building had to have been destroyed by other means.
FEMA documents a 1,200-foot diameter debris field around each tower. Videos show multi-ton steel sections of hundreds of individual steel pieces ejecting out of the towers at 60 miles an hour for a distance of 600 feet. They also show clouds of debris pulverized in mid-air and isolated explosive ejections as many as 60 stories below the so-called crush zone. Videos also show the near total destruction of both towers. What does all this tell us about the forces and energies involved in the destruction?
The spread of debris in a large radius around each tower. What we see is an outward explosion of material beyond the perimeters of each footprint. And this is not expected, and it's not congruent with the reports of our government.
Debris that was shooting out for hundreds of feet in all directions, 70 miles an hour, leaving the 80th floor of the North Tower and making a fairly level trajectory, that to me is fairly alarming.
Large multi-ton beams were hurled hundreds of yards laterally. Gravity works vertically, not laterally.
The number I got was 78 miles an hour. So something's happening to throw these things horizontally at those kinds of speeds. And here it is trailing white smoke the whole time. It really is indicative of some kind of explosion.
The individual explosions that I noticed 20 and 30 and 40 stories below the collapsing structure, those are what we demolitions guys call squibs. And that's another characteristic that seems to be evident.
Well, in the case of the South Tower, you can see these jets of black smoke being ejected from many locations on many different floors above the level of the impact. There's a whole bunch of these squibs or puffs that are coming out the side of the building. And naysayers tend to say, well, that's just air being blown out the windows because you have like an accordion effect, it's being compressed. Well, it's going on at a lot of different levels at the same time is one thing. And if you're compressing it out here, if you're blowing out the windows down here, how are you getting the air pressure? I mean, it doesn't really work to say it's just air pressure. Estimated these are coming out faster than 100 miles an hour.
The impact of the floors pancaking upon themselves would create gushes of air out the side, but not the kind of explosive force that we saw that would throw I-beams across the street into the windows of other buildings.
The ejection of the materials out of the building, the manner in which it fell, the speed at which it fell, it exhibited all the signs of demolitions and the completeness of the destruction down to their individual elements.
And again, you've just been listening to the third part of the audio version of the documentary 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. Tune in next week to hear the next part of this amazing documentary. You know, I meet many people who don't understand the depth of the scientific evidence that members of the 9/11 truth movement are working off of. They have a very simplistic idea of who we are and what we believe in. If you're one of those people and just happen to have turned your radio dial to this station, please check out the scientific evidence that motivates us to want a new investigation. The website is ae911truth.org. So ae911truth.org. Another good website is ct911truth.org. We know we've been lied to. We know there's a cover-up going on, and we want the truth through a new and independent investigation. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.